It can.
Thank you.
Dr. Chen is professor of epidemiology and preventive medicine, as well as associate director for disparities on research at University of California in Davis, and their campus is there.
Thank you, Doreen, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure to be here, and I want to tell you a little bit about what we've been finding about BMI, body mass index, among adults, what their characteristics are, and their implications. So here we are. So these are the objectives. I want to provide you with a context about what we're doing and who we did it with, how we did it, what we found, and then what conclusions that were drawn from this area. So as you know, body mass index is a way in which we can measure weight for height to classify overweight and obesity. And as you know, at the highest levels, it suggests chronic disease problems. And then at the lowest level, it suggests underweight and the condensed things associated with it. And this is probably perhaps the best measure at the population level to classify weight. Now, according to the World Health Organization, their definition of BMI in terms of overweight is greater or equal to 25, and obesity is defined as greater than over 30. However, at the same time, the World Health Organization defines for Asians the overweight being less at 23, and then obesity at 27.3. And I believe that this data is principally based upon data from Southeast Asia and Southwest Asia, because what they found was that for particularly Asian Indians, that they were experiencing chronic diseases such as heart attack at a lower BMI than what whites were. So in a sense, when we hear about BMI reported in the United States, you'll just have to fact that in for Asians, that it is at a lower threshold area. So this is pretty relevant now. Okay, so sorry. Let me just go punch this. Okay, good. So let me just tell you about the people we studied. The people that we studied are Hmong. The Hmong historically are from Southwest China, Laos, Thailand, and Vietnam. Unlike other Asian American groups, the Hmong are not necessarily associated with a particular land or land, a culture like Thai or Chinese or whatever. They're from kind of, they don't have a, shall we say, a country of origin. But so the Hmong, as you know, were people who were very supportive of the U.S. government in Southeast Asia. They were responsible for rescuing the pilots who got shot over Laos, and you know, very, very loyal. And because of that loyalty, the United States government made a special effort to transport them back to the United States to resettle them. But you know, as a whole, the Hmong are very agrarian. And this is a picture of a wall of a Hmong home I visited. Just shows you the ties to their culture, and really that in general it's a very agrarian culture. And so when they come to the United States, they're faced with considerable challenges. The book that you may have read about, "The Spirit Catches You and Fall Down," was about the conflict in culture between the Hmong culture and the Western culture. And the person who interpreted for Ann Fadiman, Mei Ying, was one of our community leaders who helped us in the study. So very, very fortunate to have that there. So that is the background. So just to kind of give you another sense of the comparisons between the Hmong and others, we looked at the Hmong, according to the census, with study was conducted in Sacramento County. And what you immediately see is that The Hmong in general are a very young culture, median age of 16, compared with the Sacramento general population, about 34. And then the other thing that you see is educationally, for the great majority of Hmong, they have not finished high school, and that the amount of English in the home is very small. In fact, virtually all our interviews were conducted in Hmong as opposed to in English, and that a great percentage, about half of them, were born in the United States. So let me just tell you how we did this. What we did was we, as you know, to conduct this population-wide study, and we wanted to kind of get a representative sample, we first got a Hmong registry. And by that, we tried to go through all the sources we knew, from the telephone books to all our community contacts. And as you know, the Hmong have 17 clan names, so we used that as a guide to develop a population listing. And the result of this is we have more than 3,000 names. Now, there are some names for which we do not necessarily know whether they're Hmong or not. For example, Lee, whether it's spelled E-E-E or L-I. And then there's other names like Fang and others that we don't know. So among the things that we are able to do is create an algorithm and add to the fact not just surname, but place of birth. So if their place of birth was Laos or Thailand, then they're more likely to be Hmong than to be, let's say, another ethnic group like Chinese or Korean. And anyway, this is the basis of our population listing. Then, since this was done actually as a part of another study, we contacted them first by phone, and the eligibility for the study is that they had to be Hmong. They had not already enrolled in the study, and they had to have a household member age 18 to 64, and they had not been previously screened for hepatitis B. To be honest with you, this is a hepatitis B community-based study. This is what I'm sharing with you is just a side result of that, so that the people who are actually participating, the data we have for are people who have met these characteristics, and so in that sense may not necessarily be representative. Well, after the telephone survey, we went to the homes and did an in-home survey, interview. And during the in-home survey, we collected social demographic data. We measured BMI. And one of the things that we did with a BMI is not only measure the height and weight, but we also asked the females if they were pregnant, because that would factor into the weight factor. And then we also did a waist circumference. We also asked questions about diet, and so this was the database that we used. So this is what a in-home interview looks like. The person in green is one of our Hmong lay health workers, and in accordance with the culture, men talk with men and women talk with women. So this is a man Hmong lay health worker talking to a Hmong man and reading the questions to get the information data. So we measured height and weight. And as you can see, the gender differentiation and how we did this. And then, so these are the results that we got. For our first 150 Hmong adults, we're continuing to collect this. What you see is that we used the World Health Organization classification for Asians, and the data that we got was very surprising. Nearly 80% would be classified as overweight or obese, according to the World Health Organization standard, and that there were more likely to be female than to be male. But anyway, this is a very surprising finding, because we get the impression, all Asians are really slim and so forth, but this is not true for the Hmong. Stuck. Could you help me,
Arrow?
Oh, okay, good. All right, so here We did some statistics on this and chi-squares and others, and we found that the higher BMI was associated with being older, being born in Laos, eating a traditional Hmong diet. Now, what is a traditional Hmong diet? The traditional Hmong diet is very starchy. And then saying that they think that they are not as healthy as they are. And so these were the factors that were associated with higher BMI. We found the following to be non-significant: gender, education, employment, year of immigration, physical activity, income, Hmong language fluency, or proportion of life in the U.S. And you know, you saw the data on the gender was slightly more female, wasn't statistically significant. The fact is that most the education level was very low, so there wasn't anything. Employment was actually low. Since most people immigrated about the same time, that didn't make any difference. Physical activity, there wasn't too much physical activity, and then income level, all about the same. And then, like I said, 95% of all the interviews were held in, were conducted in Hmong, so that wasn't a difference. And then proportion of life in the U.S. are all not significant. So what can we say about this? Well, I want to caution you by saying that this particular sample of 150 were drawn from those who were eligible for our main research study, and that was that they had not been previously tested for hepatitis B. In that sense, it's a limitation, so it's not completely represented, but you can see that the potential of our sample being drawn from this very large community census of Hmong being there. But I don't personally see any statistical difference between those who have been tested and untested, because great majority of people have not been tested. We did ask some questions on diet, and this is one of very challenging area. First of all, as you know, those of you who've done work on diet are challenged by what to ask and how to measure frequency and how to measure size. And we had a dietitian tell us that the way to do this is to use your hand and say, you know, is it this size or whatever? But you know, that's still not very, very precise. And so it could be that diet really is significant, but our data didn't show it. And then secondly, that it is cross-sectional, meaning it was just a point in time. So what are our conclusions and implications? Well, we were very surprised by the high levels of overweight and obesity. We know that overweight and obesity is associated with much of our chronic disease risk, and so we can predict that Hmong are going to be vulnerable to many of the diseases that are so common in the United States: heart, cancer, diabetes, and so forth and so on. So we really need to find out how can we develop and evaluate interventions to achieve optimal BMI. So we believe that needs to be done at the individual level, and that is, how do we promote consistent physical activity? And so one of the things that we've done is, some of the Hmong that we work with have taken this as a challenge among themselves. After having seen this data, they say, well, I'm gonna try and do something about it. Can't do anything about my height. So the only thing I can do is what I eat and exercise. And so at this point in time, we still don't have an effective intervention that really to promote consistent physical activity that results in BMI change, because it takes a lot to change a BMI. And then so we're also thinking, well, at the community level, what can we learn? Because at the community level, we've been very successful in promoting PAP testing. We've been very successful in promoting vaccination, immunization things. Are there some things that we can learn relating to norm change rather than just the individual change? And so that's where we are at this present time. Thanks. That's it. Yes, ma'am. We asked occupation, type of occupation, but to be honest with you, the great majority of Hmong were unemployed.
Next, I'd like to introduce professor in family medicine and community health at University of Pennsylvania. He leads Penn's Asian Health